Hello and welcome to this talk about expert committees and the use of forensic philately. Just like to thank the FIPA organisation for supporting this talk, and this was originally given at Europhilex. Crucially, we also had Foster Freeman demonstrating their new video spectrometer, the VSC 9000. So my thanks to Royal Mail as well, with Tony, and also Tobias from COLA, who are interested in how we do some of the expertising and how we can actually liaise in the future. So moving on to the talk, this is slide two. I'm going to talk a little bit about the introduction of the introducing the work of the expert committee, talking a bit about the adding value to forensic philately, helping Royal Mail and helping the Philatelic Traders Society Limited, and also to tell you a little bit about the ongoing research which I've been involved with. So we moved into new premises in Abchurch, which is near Bank Railway Station. The Queen, late Queen, Queen Elizabeth II, came to open the facilities, and we had various people from the committee helping to show what we all did. This is an example of a stamp which I provided earlier this year, and it's interesting in the sense that although it says New Zealand, you'll notice down at the bottom it has this rather vague N something, which happens to stand for Niue, one of the islands in the Pacific. So we're talking a little bit about how the expert committee works. So in terms of the way, if you're submitting items, you can actually find out what happens. So you'll provide an item which will have some form of description, and first of all it's checked by somebody within the committee who will want to see whether in fact they think what you've actually written ties up with what they may think it's written. Crucially, there are a lot of volunteers who will also help with the whole process of looking things up and possibly then submitting them for further checking. There's a lot of people who are consultants who specialise in various aspects of philately, and once all those things have been collated, those responses are then handed over to the people sitting on the expert committee. So we're now moving on to slide six. And here are some of the expert committee, and this is a fairly typical meeting with us sitting around the table and obviously discussing what items have been submitted. Here we go then. So here's the stamp which I showed you earlier. You'll see that it's been recorded as being from Niue, 1902, and it's SG number 1. And the description which has been written says 1D Carmine, Stamps of New Zealand, hand-stamped T1, which is the Niue overprint, in bluish green, and it is used. It has soiled margins and is genuine. And you'll notice that it is signed by the chairman, Chris Harmon. Okay, so one of the problems with stamps, of course, is are they genuine, are they fraudulently manipulated, and so on and so forth. So part of the enjoyment of doing this type of work is to try and ascertain what knowledge we have. Now, crucially, as I mentioned earlier, we have a situation whereby we need potentially to compare with similar material, and equally to be able to consult with people who specialise in certain areas. So these certificates which I'm showing were produced a few years ago now, Mauritius one which says after comparison, and another one on the right hand side here which says after consultation. The one on the left, the Mauritius one, is deemed to have a forged surcharge, and on the right-hand side it is deemed that it is genuine. And you'll notice that if it's a bad certificate, you get several people from the committee signing it, and if it's a good one, you just get the chairman. Okay, so this is another stamp which I submitted back in 2010. As you can see, it was rather a distressed stamp, and certainly on the right-hand side margins, it had obviously somebody had cut into it. But the crucial thing about this is that there's sufficient information from the stamp and checking with the reference material that in fact it was actually deemed to be genuine. So if we move on to why stamps may be worth a small amount of money or basically a lot more money, how do we find out? Okay, the main thing, of course, is that items may be manipulated to enhance their value. The penny black on the left has a very nice Maltese cross, and on the right-hand side, you'll see that there are some stamps which I showed at Stockholmia in 2019, where some of these have had forged cancellations. So, crucially, we obviously, as a whole process of expertising, need to look at how this has been derived. And crucially, we've got personal knowledge, reference material, and scientific analysis as appropriate. Okay, so who's actually in this committee for 2025? And we've got Chris Harman, the chairman, Thomas Barringer, Tim Harrison, Ian Harvey, Peter Lister, and Simon Richards. They are the crucial people who are helping this year. So, just to go back a little bit about in terms of the history of the expert committee, you'll see that it was actually founded in April 1894. Because of the council at that time, they felt that they needed to appoint an expert committee who shall adjudicate upon any stamp or stamps submitted to them for their opinion. And there are the photographs of three of the original members. Okay, now moving up to more recent times, we now have approximately 50 members who have actually been on the committee, and crucially, the committee is seeking assistance from many consultants who have specialist knowledge, often esoteric. Anyway, let's have a think about how the committee is working, and the main thing to say is that it is labour intensive. People who submit items probably think, oh, this is a 5-minute job, but in fact, I certainly allow at least half an hour for looking at any item that I'm scrutinising. But the main thing is that people try to check what information has been submitted, and then obviously try and check what is actually relevant in terms of that item and potentially how it may have been fraudulently manipulated. Crucially to making things work, we have Lucy Caulfield, the expertisation manager. And if you want to know a bit more about some of the work that we do at the Royal Philatelic Society, the paper by Sundberg in 2019 is a nice sort of little summary of what was happening. Okay, so here's Lucy in action. There's a list of the dates for the committee meetings on the bottom left, and on the right-hand side, you'll see that the Lady Tracy, who works with Peter Lister, Peter is a very, very knowledgeable member of the expert committee. Tracy is excellent in making sure that things work smoothly, and Lucy tries to make sure that we're all doing things which we should be doing. Okay, so this is Ian Harvey, a leading member of the expert committee for many years, and the photograph shows that he's actually checking over information. There's a variety of things around him. You'll see that we've got in the bottom left it says British Library, and on the right-hand side it says reference books. So these are all fundamental things which are being used all day, every day. And behind him you'll see a rack of files. They tend to have material which has been looked at in the past and therefore can be looked at in the future. Okay, we're now moving on to slide 17. And again, this is showing Ian in action, and crucially, the sort of tools of the trade, such as a magnifying glass, and then watermark detecting fluid, and so on, so forth. So this detailed slide, slide 18, tells you a little bit more about the whole process. So the stamp or the envelope or the cover is called the patient, and the details that have been sent in by a submitter are then checked and recorded. So we always mount each of these separately, and crucially, of course, it's given a unique number. So we've had over 240,000 items since the 1890s, and lo and behold, it is extremely useful to be able to do the checks for comparison. Relatively recently, we've been able to scan all the worksheets, and again, once one knows what the number is, one can then actually go and look at the original comments as made by one's predecessors. Crucially, the initial examination and the whole written comments are cross-checked by several people, and they're always ahead of any formal meeting of the committee. The committee usually meets every 6 weeks, and each member has an opportunity to examine the patient and pass comments. After each meeting, a number of items will be taken for comparison, and quite often that will go to the British Library or possibly the Royal Philatelic Collection. Obviously, we can scan items, and they may be sent to different parts of the world to consultants for comment. But as I've emphasised in yellow here, the crucial thing is all expertising is a matter of opinion, and experts, unsurprisingly, and expert committees do not always agree. The main thing is that obviously when a certificate is produced, if the people receive, or the person who submitted the item receives the certificate, obviously if further information comes along, the committee will be very happy to look at that again and further discuss it. Okay, we're now moving on to slide 19. This shows me using the Foster Freeman machine, and crucially, how do things, I suppose, get manipulated? I suppose the most obvious thing is, particularly with things like penny blacks, it is possible that they've been cleaned, and sometimes they may be re-gummed, but the idea, of course, is that the person providing the fraud will see some form of additional financial remuneration because of the way that they think it has been passed on as a more valuable stamp than it really is. Also, there are some very clever people who are able to replace parts of missing stamps, particularly the Cape of Good Hope triangular stamps. They quite often have margins or corners added. And then, of course, the whole aspect of stamps which have come particularly from different parts of the world. Quite often people will add stamps or take off stamps, put better stamp looking stamps on a cover, again to potentially mean that these covers are worth more money. Right, so here we go. In terms of creating rare separations, we may have roulettes and pin perforations. These are very specialised areas, but of course potentially they are worth a lot of money. At the Europhilex meeting, I showed this example of some stamps, which is slide 20, and you'll see that it says Bahamas 4 pence, and I asked the audience at the time, well, what do you think of this? Now people immediately stuck up their hand and said it's a forgery. Now this was produced by a well-known group of forgers known as the Spiro brothers, and this is a classic way of the how they basically cancel these stamps, and also in terms of the whole colour and the way that the it is not designed to fool in the sense that it can be passed off as genuine, but they would argue at the time that they were producing items which impoverished collectors were not allowed to own the real thing, but they were occupying a sort of gap in the market. Have we heard that all before? anyway, moving on to slide 21. This is Peter Lister doing a lot of the excellent work of which he's done for a large number of years. And crucially, what they're doing is they're actually providing photographs which get scanned and put into OWL. The whole aspect of this is an audit trail so that it can actually be compared. I suppose the main thing to saying is that it's just ongoing. We have a system which works. It's possible to check these things, and equally there's a thoroughness of how this is done. Now, these are stamps which I've owned and enjoy looking at, and so some of the things I'm just going to talk about now is how potentially it's possible to use a little bit of forensic philately to actually decide what's going on. So if I just move on to slide 23, here we have this Canadian stamp, and you'll notice that the perforations, there was obviously a perforation which was not cut cleanly, but what I've done is I've actually used the VSC to actually measure the size of the perforations, and you'll notice that they vary very slightly. If one was doing this statistically, we'd want to repeat that several times. But the thing about the perforations is quite often it's possible to identify the machine that was actually used for the printing. And equally, of course, if somebody has access to another perforating machine, whether that machine has been fraudulently used. But that's an example. And if we move on to stamps, which I suppose you can say that these were forged, the so-called Queen Elizabeth II Machin stamps. If you look at the one on the right-hand side, you'll see that the actual perforations are fairly poorly cut, and equally the quality of the image of the 24-piece stamp is very poor compared with the one on the left, which is the genuine one. So it's possible fairly easily to identify these things and then hopefully come up with a reason why these things should have been forged. Clearly, one of the reasons why Royal Mail went to provide more security features, because it was relatively easy to actually forge these type of stamps. And you'll notice now when I show this enlargement, this is slide 25, that you can see that the actual quality of the printing is very different from the genuine one. So here we are at slide 26, and this I suppose nicely illustrated a cover which is has very clear postmarks from Durban, and also all these postmarks look the same. Now, this is not always the case, and so one of the things which we will do is we can obviously check whether in fact stamps have been potentially cleaned or manipulated. This particular stamp here, the threepence stamp, I'm just looking at it under the light of 490 to 560 nanometers, and there is nothing particularly startling about that, but it does show obviously the sort of degradation that occurs with these stamps through age, and that is quite typical. Moving on to some other stamps, these are ones again from my collection, and these just simply show the cancellations and the quality of the printing and so forth. And obviously these can be used as reference, or they could be compared with other reference material. Crucially, these days, a lot of things are obviously done by different printing methods, and this particular postcard, again from my collection, just shows the actual quality of the printing. Now, moving back 100 years or so, Bradbury Wilkinson were one of the printers, and here we have an example of their work, what I'm showing is that in fact, when you start looking at these things extremely critically, you can see that there are slight flaws in the printing methods, and hence there's a little bit between the S and the O and the N at the top of the stamp, and you'll notice that the actual Bradbury bit again has a flaw. So these obviously are useful indicators of the sort of history of the item and where it may have been produced. Also, I mentioned earlier about the fact that penny blacks might be re-cleaned and then re-gummed. This is an example of a stamp whereby you can see from the perforations that the actual gum has actually sort of leaked into the front of the perforation, which of course would not happen under normal conditions. So there are fairly careful ways that we operate to try and make sure that we can try and understand how these stamps may have been manipulated and what evidence we have. One of the pleasures of my work has been to look at some of the charismatic stamps, when we were back at Devonshire Place, I was involved in 2014 with actually looking at the 1 cent British Guiana, and these are some of the images which I produced at that time. And those of you who are able to attend the Europhilix conference would have seen this stamp being displayed. Returning to the sort of evidence base that I've mentioned earlier, we're now on slide 33. This one is showing you the Zanzibar high value stamp, which if you look at it from the from what's on the left, you'll notice it seems to have a nice cancellation, sort of square item with a series of circles. The but is that these high value stamps were very rarely actually used for postage purposes. They might have been used for parcels, but what tended to happen was that people would find these stamps maybe on legal documents or other documents which would not be used through the postal service, and using the VSC it's possible to show that in fact it had alternative use, in other words, in this case, from a fiscal cancellation. And one of my colleagues, John Shaw, and I wrote a paper which was published in the London Philatelist explaining how we did that. And obviously, if you're particularly interested, do go and have a look at that. Moving on to slide 34, this is something which it was enjoyable to do, especially when there was a lot of criticism at the time of the fact that Royal Mail was telling people that stamps had been fraudulently used. And in fact, we had the watchdog team come and see us at the Royal. And so on the right, we have Chris Harmon explaining about what he can actually see and understand what's actually going on. So the background to this story is here we are at slide 35, and lo and behold, if you actually look at this document, it looks extremely good in the sense of the sort of thing that you might have purchased at the post office. But in fact, these things are designed to fool. And so working with obviously people from the Royal Mail, but also showing some of the work which I'd done prior to the watchdog programme, I was able to show the differences between different printing methods. And crucially, these 50 forged stamps, in fact, are very cleverly done in the sense that they actually have different barcodes, but crucially, each sheet of 50 is exactly the same. So obviously these are produced presumably in vast numbers, but the actual technology to actually do this work is sophisticated. So therefore, how do we actually identify the genuine and the forged? So here we have the genuine, and if you look carefully, you'll see it has these sort of speckled edges, and this is entirely due to the printing method used at that time. If I now change and look at the forged one, you'll notice that the actual line is continuous, and this is because of the different printing method which the forgers were actually used. Now, this was the reason why we were involved with the program, and you'll see that we're being shown these fees to pay because of counterfeit stamps. Now, subject to all this, we obviously provided information back to Royal Mail on how these forgers were working, and equally Royal Mail produced an app whereby people could actually scan these with their mobile phones, and therefore you can actually then spot these, and as far as I'm aware now, the numbers of forged stamps have been greatly reduced. But there are obviously people who potentially can unwittingly get these things, particularly through websites, assuming that because there's a discount, that's okay. But in fact, I suppose it's the usual thing about buyer beware. Anyway, that was an interesting experience for, I think we had about 2 million people actually watching that TV program. So, moving on to some of the people with the Philatelic Traders Society. Here's Bill Barrell. I've worked with Bill over a number of things to do with forensic philately. He's a great philatelist and very, very knowledgeable, and it's nice to be able to work with him. So Bill was good at being able to produce a video, and again, it's possible through looking at slide 40 and clicking on that link, you should be able to get the video to show you what he's describing. But as you can see, he's had well over 75,000 views of that particular video, and it's really useful just to try and explain a bit more. So Bill gave me the envelope. I was able to take it and look at it with the VSC, and crucially, this was the way that the stamps had not originated on the cover, and crucially, it's the way that these things have actually been, I suppose, put on to defraud, and you'll see that they've got a red Maltese cross. But when Bill did the video, it was possible for him to take these things off and then clean them up. And I suppose the nice thing about this was to show how a fabricated cover potentially can defraud people. So these are the sort of things which I was working on. And there are various techniques, some of which are available through the internet, and again, they are useful for an enthusiastic philatelist to go into look at them in more detail. So here are the sort of things which I was doing, looking at it under ultraviolet light, illuminating it from the side, and so on. So moving on again, this is now just very briefly going to talk a little about the research. These again are stamps that I've produced, and I enjoy looking at in terms of how they may have been manipulated. I suppose the main thing to say is, of course, that we're reliant on a piece of complicated equipment. The one which we use at the Royal is a VSC 8000. And the guy that you see in the photograph, which is on slide 46, he's the person who is comes from Foster Freeman. He's an engineer, and he's the one who checks the calibration of the equipment. And we end up with certificates telling us what the status of the equipment is. And we have a very good working relationship with Foster Freeman. And I also help them with thinking about further enhancements of their equipment. And at Eurofilex, they were able to bring their VSC 9000, which again, they demonstrated to people at the exhibition. Besides the Foster Freeman machine, we have a Leica microscope, and again, it's very useful for looking at overprints and paper fibres and embossed materials. Moving on to some of the research which I've done with people at various universities. Here's Mel Bailey at the University of Surrey. This is a few years ago now. They can look at German banknotes, but the whole aspect of this is potentially how fraud may be created and how we can actually detect it. Clearly there are things which we are, I suppose, keen to try and understand how these things might have been produced. I was involved with asking a specialist firm called Keyence. They produce 3D microscopes, and I was involved with asking them to come along so I could look at this Mauritius printing plate. And that again was very interesting because of looking at the depth of the way that the plate had been cut, and we did eventually establish that the engraver was left-handed. So that again is something, that plate was expertised, and it was sold for a fairly large sum of money. So another thing which I've been involved with is some of the postal history includes seals, and we have a 3D facility again, which is extremely useful for actually clarifying where these seals have come from, and also hopefully the sort of date of use. I've been quite keen to understand more about colour. We're on slide 51, and some of you who may have done colour tests may recognise some of these facilities. So I went up to Newcastle University, and you can see from the items on the table that they are slightly different in colour. And the idea is obviously to ask people to organise these things so that you can actually decide how good a colour perception happens to be. So I'm obviously working with them and with other manufacturers specifically to try and ascertain whether in fact we can more categorically go into what a colour is. If you look at a catalogue such as that produced by Stanley Gibbons, yes, it's okay in the sense it will give you a colour, but it says dark green, pale green, yellowy green, and so on and so forth. What it would be extremely helpful to do is to actually have an international standard which is recognised by philatelists, and therefore it would be possible, presumably using a machine, but this is where it's open to research. And I suppose the main message is, are women better at discriminating colours? Because some of those ladies are tetrachromats. In other words, they can see colours which men cannot do. Equally, where do we draw a line in terms of the discrimination between different colours and what may be a suitable colour within a statistical parameter? Anyway, research is ongoing, as they say. So moving on to another area, elemental analysis is something I've been working on for quite some time, and I've done work at Portsmouth and Warwick, and more recently at the University College of London. So these are exposing stamps to non-destructive use of X-rays, and as part of that, it's then trying to understand what different elements happen to be in the stamp, and then comparing it potentially with another submitted item to see whether in fact they are the same or are different. Most recently, earlier this year, I was lucky enough to be able to go to the University College of London, and this is some work which we've literally just started relatively recently in talking about the whole aspect of phase shifts, and whether in fact we can actually use that for interference or refraction effects. So this is a photograph showing the stamp being mounted, and this is the sort of thing which we can compare. So I'm grateful to Peter Cockburn for some of his North Borneo forged stamps and genuine stamps, and this work is very much sort of ongoing. I suppose the main thing to say at the moment is that yes, we can detect different types of ink, and crucially, this whole aspect of the fibrous structure using this technique certainly shows differences between the genuine and the fraudulently manipulated. Even more esoteric are things like using scanning electron microscope. We're now on slide 57. Again, it is potentially useful, but of course, if you're trying to use it from a routine point of view, you could be talking about serious cost of asking for the machine to be run. So we know we can actually get sensible results out of it, but is it worth spending hundreds, maybe thousands of pounds for one analysis where there may be something else much easier to do? Right, so these are the sort of things which at Stampex we regularly meet up with members of the public, and it's great to be able to chat to people about things which interest them. And most importantly, here we are at slide 59, whereby if you want to be able to submit your material, here's Lucy's address at Abchurch Lane, there's our email address, and also the website, and of course other expertising committees are also available. Thank you very much for your time, and enjoy your philatelic experience. Thank you.